We have monthly briefings at Soleri for legislators and officials. And this one is on gold legislation. I would point out that if you look at who's speaking there, we have participants who know a lot more about gold legislation than we do. So every state is different, but many states are moving on gold, and we think that's a very good thing. We're very supportive of seeing the states use gold to help protect their freedom. Our focus at Solaria is on financial freedom, and we're interested in doing things with respect to finances that protect state sovereignty. So, and I think we, all of us gathered here, feel the importance of state sovereignty and the role of state sovereignty in protecting individual sovereignty. Our briefing in January was on the Bitcoin bailout, and then last month we had a wonderful briefing on sovereign state banks with Professor Richard A. Werner. We feel very strongly, again, the goal is sovereignty, and to do that, citizens need the ability to transact with dollars freely without interruption, and it's exceptionally important to protect cash. Today we're going to be talking about gold legislation as well as some cash legislation with Tim and Susan. Next month, stopping a constitutional convention, Susan was shocked to discover a resolution passed supporting a con in South Dakota. She didn't even realize that was happening. And the same thing has happened to us in Tennessee, and we are extremely concerned about that. So we'll be talking about that in April, and then in May we're going to be talking about protecting states from federal and global money that asserts controls or terms and conditions, which is contradictory and not lawful under the state constitution. That's something we struggled a lot with in Tennessee. If you want to participate or be involved in any of the briefings, please register through Elizabeth Murphy. Elizabeth represents us in Tennessee and is in charge of all of our activities on behalf of supporting the states. Our outline tonight is I'm going to go through, we've developed model templates for gold legislation, talk with some of the issues. I'm going to be asking Susan and Tim to help me with that. And then I want Susan to describe what she's been doing with cash legislation. Elizabeth will mention what we've also been working on in Tennessee, and then we're going to have plenty of time for questions and answers. Okay, so let me introduce Tim Caban is a really outstanding financial planner from Malvern, Pennsylvania. He has a wealth of experience both on Wall Street and then working with individuals and families, and he has the ability of understanding politics and money at the macro level and at the micro level. He can take you all the way from the top of the global financial market down to what it's going to do to your family tomorrow. And he's been an invaluable resource. He does the equity overviews on the Salier Report with me and just has a razor mind. He's been working to communicate with the legislators in Pennsylvania on a number of issues, and we're going to bring some of that up tonight. Susan is one of the smartest people I've ever met. She's got a PhD in electrical engineering from MIT and was in Silicon Valley when they tried to tell her kids were going to have to wear masks and go to school on Zoom. And she said, no, and went up to South Dakota and then got immediately involved in protecting food and financial freedom in South Dakota. And she's been working tirelessly. She's got a group of people in South Dakota called Team Cash, and they've been working to protect cash. And I'm going to ask her to tell you more about that today. Elizabeth Murphy represents us in Tennessee and also represents the Weston Price Foundation and is very involved in food. Carolyn is our general counsel and has worked with me since the mid-90s and has a phenomenal understanding of all of the financial issues, again, like Tim, all the way from the top of the global financial system and both the liquid and illiquid markets down to family funding. Ricardo Oscam is an investment analyst. He supports me on my Solari Screens business, and he is in the Netherlands and is there's nobody quicker or faster in making and manipulating a PowerPoint than Ricardo. So he's in the Netherlands managing our PowerPoint presentation today. Tim, Susan, Elizabeth, any other comments you want to say by way of introduction? Nope. Okay, so I want to brag on Tim. Just did a mailing campaign on the Bitcoin bailout to his finance committee in Tennessee, sorry, in Pennsylvania. I was with him in Pennsylvania and met with some of with the chairman and his staff of the finance committee in Pennsylvania. And it's a great group of people. And Tim, I just wanted you to mention what you had done for the Bitcoin bailouts.
Yeah, so thanks, Catherine. So, my goal with this in terms of communicating with my legislators was to do something that stood out from the usual. So, my hypothesis here was to create a package for each member of the Senate and House Finance Committees, which is where the money flows. So, that's where I sent it. And I included the Hijacking Bitcoin book by Roger Ver and Steve Patterson, as well as the Bitcoin bailout brochure or book from Solari, as well as the What Can States Do. And I included a cover letter there, and I sent it priority mail. So I know that a couple of them have responded that they got it at least. So at least they opened it and didn't throw it in the trash. But the goal was really to stand out from all the spam emails and that type of thing, and give them something tangible in their hand that lasts longer than a phone call. So that these are pictures of those things with my cover letter, the book, and the packages.
Okay. And I will m mention again that the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee knows you, so
He does.
when
We
this comes in, it's from somebody who's driven to Harrisburg and met with him personally. So, gold legislation. After one experience working with the state on gold legislation, Carolyn and I decided we would sit down and see if we couldn't write out our sort of what we thought of as model gold legislation. Now, I find every state is different, and so it's hard to write a one model fits all. And again, our focus was on sovereignty, and our focus was on making sure that the states develop strong analog systems. We are extremely nervous about electronic transactions and the misuse of electronic transactions in a number of ways, which we'll talk about towards the end. And so we wanted to focus on the pieces that a state could put into place that would really get the train tracks of their analog system working. Now, if you go, we have a financial transaction freedom website, and in it, it's got a resource center for gold legislation, and we're gonna walk you through the different pieces of what we put together. So, if Ricardo, if you could go over to financial transaction freedom and bring up the different sections of the gold legislation page, that would be great.
So we're on the general page right now, and in the top navigation bar on the resources and links, there's a drop-down menu, and the item says gold and silver legislation, which will take you here.
Okay, so let's start with legal tender. So we start at the top. We don't need to click down because we can just talk about it generically. So I have to say again that Representative Ivory from Utah is here, and ha the fact that he got that done in 2011 and it's 2025, and now many of the other states are just going about getting to do this is shows you what a leadership position that Utah has had. We think step one, of course, is a state making gold and silver legal tender. Now, in detail, what does that mean? You can define legal tender in many different ways, but we want a legal tender where it's a legal tender and the state will accept gold and silver, but others are not required to. And the question, of course, always is in the definition. What is gold and silver? And different states have different definitions. Our definition is very broad. And so it's a broad definition of gold and silver. You can limit it to gold and silver issued by the federal government, by the federal and foreign governments, the state government or state and other state governments. So there's a wide selection, but we would argue that it would be very broad. And of course, what that does is it sets up the infrastructure you need to make sure to do everything you can to remove the taxes from gold and silver. One of the big issues, of course, being capital gains at the federal level, and the argument that it's legal tender will hopefully help with that. And we'll talk about that when we get to taxes. The next step is permitting state purchases of precious metals. So using precious metals as a part of a reserve of a rainy day fund. And not every state has a rainy day fund. I think every state should have a rainy day fund. I note Wyoming just passed a bill to allow it. It's got a mineral fund and it just authorized a 10 million purchase. Utah has authorized purchases, and maybe when we get to Q&A, Marlo can tell us a little bit about how he's doing because they're making a significant investment. Now, Utah has very significant, very high bond rating, low debt, and a very large series of budget reserve funds. So it makes sense for them. But the idea is to put a portion of the reserve funds, if a state has it, in precious metals to protect against inflation and certain kinds of scenarios where gold and silver have historically performed very well. And that's simple. Now, we used the worked off of the Tennessee legislation. Tennessee has a controller, and the idea is that by having a second official sort of tracking with the controls and how this is being done will permit you to do it. It also authorizes the treasurer to keep a significant amount of information about the precious metals position confidential and protected for FOIA for, I think, reasons that we all understand. Now, Susan, I wanted to have you say something about the legal tender issues and the importance of, well, why don't I just ask you to jump in?
So I'm Susan. I'm, as Catherine said, actually just a normal citizen in South Dakota, but who believes in cash. But anyway, in South Dakota, we've seen several legislators come with this idea of making transactional gold, meaning digitally traded gold, legal tender in the state, and without having any other gold le or silver legislation, actually. So, as Catherine says, I'm not necessarily against digital gold if we also have physical gold and silver and laws to protect that and the state investing in it and things like that. So I've been trying to switch these legislators from focusing on digitally traded gold that sits in another state to actually South Dakota, the state purchasing gold or reserves, rainy day fund, those kind of ideas, and shoring up our own sovereignty in South Dakota.
So one of the issues that has come up when Susan and I were discussing this is the concern about electronic systems is one, integrity, but the other is that it is absolutely essential, and this you get into this when you're working on cash, that dollar liquidity be protected. The last thing we want to see is citizens within a state who have a great deal of dollars and very little precious metals suddenly require precious metals to do their transactional business. Because essentially, if you're trying to protect sovereignty, if you look at the central bankers of the world, they control most of the precious metals. And we don't want to, as much as I love gold and silver, I don't want to be dependent on a commodity that the central bankers control for my daily transactions. And so the reason we did the Sovereign State Bank presentation first last month is we think protecting dollar liquidity and having a healthy banking system that can operate in the dollar currency is number one in terms of protecting financial freedom, and that includes protecting cash. And so we want precious metals to supplement that. We think it is a terrible mistake to get dependent on precious metals. To be controlled in the dollar system so we're not free to use the our dollar liquidity and then to be short squeezed into precious metals because it would put us in a very deflationary short squeeze. So We think that it's critical to have a balance of high liquidity in both dollars and gold. Again, in both of them, but certainly in gold, you need high integrity. We saw one draft bill which essentially would have let private parties use a state bullion depository to promote electronic cash or electronic gold systems that where the state would have no assurance of quality control or auditing. And of course, those are all the problems we're trying to get away from now. Okay.
Catherine, can I jump back in on this?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
you very did a very good job explaining the gold short squeeze. And one of the arguments we've had in South Dakota is, or I've heard over and over from legislators as well as citizens, is that the dollar is no good because it's fiat. So we actually want a gold-backed dollar either, or we want to just trade in gold and silver. And the problem with that, as you said, is the short squeeze. The other problem with that is currencies historically have ended up fiat so that the economy can grow and you don't have runaway inflation. But we're never taught that in school. And so it's no wonder the citizens and the legislators just hear, oh, the dollar's no good because it's not gold backed anymore. And we were never taught to why it's not gold backed and why we actually don't want a gold and silver currency. Gold and silver is an investment, not a currency.
Right. Although I have no objection of using gold and silver as a currency. I've always told everybody if they want to start a community currency on the just do it basis, that's a way to do it. But if you look at the level of transactions and what the economy needs to grow, you absolutely have to have dollar liquidity. And that's why I love Richard Werner's presentations. If you're listening to this and you haven't heard any of the presentations and the briefing, the last month's briefing with Richard Werner was great at explaining it. And we ran into this in Tennessee, and so I literally flew Richard to Tennessee and had him spend several days with a number of different officials and legislators. And he finally spent a couple days, even had a shooting practice with Senator Nicely. And it was amazing. If Elizabeth wasn't driving, I would get her to jump in and tell you how, after they had listened to the nuts and bolts of how you grow an economy from Richard, they realized, oh, the last thing we want is a deflationary short squeeze in gold and silver. And they realized we've got to have liquidity. We've got to have dollar liquidity as sort of one of the most basic parts of our economy. Okay, well, let's jump to the next one, Ricardo. Let's go down to eliminating state taxes. So it's remarkable how many states have pulled off some or all of the taxes on precious metals. And again, it's complicated. Different states have different taxing structures, so it very much varies state to state. But I know Senator Nicely spent 7 years getting the sales tax off of gold and silver in Tennessee. And I remember, him saying, look, you just have to never quit. And he was repeatedly told it wouldn't be possible. But finally, after a lot of good work from people, it came off. And so I know some of you also have experience with this. But one of the big ones is getting the sales tax off. The other is getting the any income tax, particularly that would affect capital gains. One of the things, if you could just run down the state tax l language there, Ricardo. One of the things we added was some states, let's go back a little bit, some states have provided for a potential tax credit if federal capital gains are charged on gold and silver transaction. And that's sort of an extra mile you can go, and that's also in the language. Okay, the next is the creation of a state mint and depository. Tennessee has been working on the possibility of a state mint, and we included the something based on the proposed language. We also included the language from the Texas Bullion Depository, which is the only bullion depository that a state has done. And it's a bit of a hybrid model. It was developed and started with the help of private parties. So it's sort of a public-private partnership. And I'm a great believer that a strong bullion depository, particularly if it would provide additional depository functions, would be a major attraction. But if you look at the work and the financial commitment involved, it's something that no state has really taken on. The Bank of North Dakota is the only sovereign state bank, Texas, the only bullion depository. I think if you're serious about sovereignty and financial freedom, there are enormous benefits to having both a state bank and a state bullion depository. If you could just skip ahead to the next slide, we'll come back to this one, but skip to the briefing memo slide, Ricardo. I just want to show them. Carolyn and I and the Solera team sat down and wrote a long piece on how what the issues are of doing a bullion depository. And if any of you ever get serious about introducing a bullion depository in your state, I would really recommend you take a look at it. It's called U.S. State Bullion Depositories, and it's up in the memo section on the Financial Transaction Freedom website. You can see it here. And some of the others, what the states can do, and the Bitcoin bailout we have there too. Okay, just jump back to the gold legislation. The last piece we have is on permitted assets for state pension funds. We really feel between the mining stocks and some of the other options available to the state pension funds, if I was a legislator, that would not be an issue that I would want to open up unless the pension funds were actively asking for it. I think it's much more important to get the rainy day funds purchase, the infrastructure there. If you have a bullion depository, that is then something that you might want to visit. Now, I know that Treasurer Oakes has been working on electronic transactions, and I would be, when we get to questions and answers, I'm going to have some questions for him on how that's going. Utah clearly being in the lead again on this. But I will say this, I've seen many proposals for electronic transactions, and they all go the wrong way in terms of sovereignty. And they all propose things that could basically click us into the digital transaction control grid that we're trying to avoid by using gold and silver. And many of them do not have the provisions for integrity. I've worked with gold and silver since 2000 with for 10 years I was an investment advisor working in both Europe and the United States, with gold positions. And anybody who's worked closely knows there are real questions about how you ensure integrity as to whether gold and silver is really there. And so I'm extremely, it's 25 years of developing extreme conservatism about how you do these things and making sure whatever you do electronically, it serves sovereignty, and it has real integrity, and you don't have other states or private parties sneaking things on you that you don't want in your state, particularly if you've made it legal tender. You want to make sure whatever you're accepting has the integrity that you would have if you were auditing it yourself. Susan, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say on that.
Correct. I think we, at least in South Dakota, where we literally have nothing on this topic, I think we need to start with physical gold and silver and the rainy day fund, as you said.
Right. You
Not and not
want
get to the last bullet point of electronic gold.
to Right. Okay, so yeah, so what we've seen in many states is people promoting electronic gold very aggressively and being willing to write the bills and do the lobbying work. And the problem is that the digital is getting way ahead of the analog. Tim, did you want to add anything on that?
No, I just would add that for the on the tax piece that sometimes comes in, that I think it's a great way to, if it's possible to lead the discussion, even though that the federal doesn't comply with it, and deal with things in that aspect, a proactive credit that you can offer to kind of bridge the gap, which you mentioned.
Right. Okay, so let's turn to cash legislation. Susan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Great. I first want to say I'm just a normal citizen in South Dakota who believes in cash, and I have been promoting cash around to anybody that'll talk to me for, a couple years now. And What happened is at the beginning of this school year, I have kids in school, they announced a cashless ticketing system for events. So football, basketball, volleyball, concerts, band concerts, any school event. And I just realized, oh, wow, that means my family that always pays in cash every day can't go to my kids' events. And that's kind of a big deal. And we're not going to comply with the credit card thing. That's not okay. It's, this is my issue. So I better stand up now. And I didn't really want to stand up now, but I had to stand up now. And so my goal with this was not actually to pass legislation. I just want to make that clear. My goal was to get every person in South Dakota to pay with cash every day and to keep cash alive, because that's what's going to keep our freedom. So this cashless ticketing, I went to school board meetings. I talked to anybody that would talk to me. I spoke up. I had others that joined me in speaking up. And we basically didn't get anywhere with the cashless ticketing thing. So we ended up writing two bills for the legislative session on cash. And my goal, again, with these bills was not really to get them passed. In fact, I'm shocked that we got a bill passed. My goal was to get everybody talking about cash, everybody using cash. So every time there was a newspaper article or a letter to the editor about cash, I felt like we won. And every time the word cash was used in the state capitol, we won. And that was my mindset. And so I have a whole stack of newspaper articles. I think we've had about 20 newspaper articles. Several of them are literally front page of the mainstream news with cash and the cash as the first word. So I won big time because I got 20 newspaper articles about, and some of them were articles like school board, is against cash. Okay, well, we're talking about cash, so we're winning. Okay, so that was my mindset in doing all of this. I just want to make that really clear to start with. So Ricardo, if you could go to the cash website, please, and I'll walk you through the two bills. So the first bill was accept cash at school events. We initially went for high school events, as well as the Board of Regents, which is college events, as well as the Board of Technical Education, and we also included concessions. And actually, let me back up a second. I wrote the original draft of the cash at school events bill. What I did is copied off of some other states that had done it, basically Ohio and North Carolina. I thought Ohio had the best wording, except Ohio made one mistake. They forgot or intentionally did not include the playoffs, because the playoffs are not run by the school, they're run by an external agency. So I fixed that in our bill. So basically, I copied the language off Ohio and I wrote this bill, and then I sent it to my local representative as well as a few others who I thought might be open to it, and said, who will sponsor this? Does anyone want to take this? And my local representative ended up taking it, which is fantastic. He's great. We would not have gotten any of this through, or any of these newspaper articles, without him. So he's really the hero here, not me. But what I did is I wrote the bill so that I could support him. So he doesn't have to sit in legal, or LRC as we call it, and write the bill and spend all these hours. I've already drafted it for him. And what I did was support him from there. So I did talking points and flyers and letters to the editor and everything, statistics, and made copies for the committees and all the paper handouts. I did everything I could to support him in this and to make his job as easy as possible. That was my goal as a citizen. So the first bill on this website is HB 1048, which requires cash be accepted for certain transactions. So this bill was all in-person retail transactions under $100. That was the bill. So businesses must accept cash if they're in-person retail and under $100. We went to House, this bill went to House Commerce and Energy. We got hammered 0-13 against us, but we did provide a five-page paper handout to the committee. Several members of the committee said they liked our bill. Several of them said they learned something. We obviously had a whole lineup of lobbyists against us, retailers, farmers, I mean, everybody pretty much against us. And the committee, it was made clear in that committee that South Dakota doesn't want to regulate businesses, period. And but that regulating a state-funded organization, let's say like schools or the DMV government agencies, would be amenable, they'd be amenable to that. So we kind of learned that in committee. The other thing we learned out of this committee was that they really wanted to see that people were hurting because businesses wouldn't take cash. So they really wanted to see that we couldn't buy groceries. And they wanted a list of businesses that wouldn't take cash. And if you click, don't do it, Ricardo, but if you click on those hot links for those bills, South Dakota is very good at that takes you to the South Dakota bill website, and they're very good at providing the audio of the testimony. So you can go back and listen to the lobbyists that were against us, listen to their arguments, and listen to what the committee said. And that just might help. The goal here is to help other states do cash legislation without spending all the hours that I did and my team Cash did. Team Cash is 38 people now, including all the people that have helped me. My family's just been the face of Team Cash. But it's helping other states just copy and paste or use some of the arguments or listen to what the lobbyists are going to say so you can prepare yourself, that kind of thing. So that's why we put all this up on the website. So the second bill was acceptance of cash for school affiliated events. As I said, we started with the colleges and the high schools and the technical education and the concessions. We went through the House. We got the majority vote, didn't pass. It was kind of drawn out. So we were able to reintroduce in the Senate, actually got through the Senate first, and then came back to the House. We're able to flip one vote in the House that got us passed in the House, and the governor just signed it a few days ago. So we did get cash at school events passed. We had to drop the colleges. We had to drop the Board of Regents, which is the colleges, the technical education, and we dropped concessions as well. The reasoning is the problem with the colleges and the Board of Regents is they had gone cashless a long time ago. So everyone was used to complying and everyone was used to it. We got the high schools this year, right when they implemented it. And so we were able to, right when they implemented it, we brought the bill immediately. So I don't know if we'd brought the bill next year if we would have been able to get through because everyone would have said, well, we've been doing it for a year. So what's the problem? I just don't know. So we had good timing with that. And if you click down, Ricardo, on the HB, the testimony and breakdowns. So under that tab, we just copied our representative's testimony. He gave permission for people to copy it if that's helpful. This is all of his testimony there. And then if you scroll down, there's testimony that we gave, or scroll down the, yep, keep going. There's testimony that the citizens gave in committee. There's a flyer for the cash bill, keep going, that we sent to all the representatives and senators. And then actually the committees are next. The next tab, if you go to the next tab down, the talking points, there we go. There's talking points for both bills as well as text of what people was my a suggestion of what people said, or that was some of them changed their testimony. Then there's some documents that were specific to South Dakota. We did a lot of paper handouts with various proof that, you know, this wasn't a local school board, it wasn't one school board, that kind of thing. If you keep scrolling down, that the playoff big discussion was the playoff venues. We're going to lose a good playoff venue because they don't take cash. So why would they rent it to a school where they have to take cash? But currently they all do take cash, so that they had lobbyists against us too. But we had printouts to say, well, they do take cash, in fact, at for admissions. They don't take cash for concessions. So that's one of the reasons we dropped the concessions from the bill. The other thing, actually, I just remembered that I did a little differently on this bill is I actually defined cash as physical coins and notes. And the reason I didn't define it as legal tender is because the definition of legal tender can change, as I learned from the transactional gold experience where they wanted to make digital gold legal tender in South Dakota. I'm going, whoa, I don't want a bill that requires them to transact the digital gold, you know, as legal tender for a school football game. So I made my own definition of cash. I felt like that was very important. Our legal did say that the definition of legal tender would be the definition at the time the bill was passed, but I didn't trust that just because things can change and people can say, oh no, that was legal tender. And I just didn't want the confusion. So I defined cash. That was pretty important to me in the bill, and I was able to keep that through passage. Okay, so if you go to the next tab, bill drafting research, this is just all the different research that I did, I basically copied from other states. I took what I liked from other states' terminology and the way they phrased it. For example, Ohio for school event ticketing doesn't say you must take cash. It says if someone presents cash for admission to a school event and you won't take it, you have to let them in for free. I thought the wording was brilliant on that, so I copied it. So these are just a screen dump of some of the other states, their bill numbers, and what their bills say. Again, just to help you, other people do their research for other states' cash bills. And then if you go down a little further, other resources, these are just other resources and statistics and things that I used in the course of pushing these bills through, letters to the editor. You can feel free to copy any of this. And then if you scroll down a little more, that's from an article that states that that have cash legislation. That map isn't quite 100% accurate, but it's another interesting data point. And then this is that Ricardo's scrolling through is South Dakota businesses with lower cash price. So really, again, as a citizen, I'm trying to get everyone to use cash every day. And so as I've gone around and talked to various groups, I want to tell them, hey, these are businesses you can support, and they offer you a discount for using cash, or they don't charge you the credit card fee, however you want to look at it. So I'm trying to promote these businesses. I have a flyer that I made up, and we'll be doing a website as well, just to promote cash in South Dakota and to get people using it. Because at the end of the day, if we don't use it, we're going to lose it. And so that's really been my goal. And us passing this cash legislation was just really a miracle. We passed by one vote at the end, but we just kept turtling and we just kept going and we got it passed.
Susan, one of the things I want to mention is that I was very struck by your statistics and how you were able to document how the young and the elderly were truly discriminated against if they couldn't pay with cash to go to a school activity. It was the numbers were very, the statistics were very impressive.
Correct. About 18% of the population does not have a credit card. And interestingly, also the other statistic in there is 18% of payments are usually in cash. So we are discriminating. And I use the Fed's statistics. I just dug through thousands of pages to find the data that I needed. So it's all there.
It's
And
all
part
there
of
in
it
that
was
section.
I realized that a lot of lobbyists just come in and lie. And so I felt like we just didn't do that. We had a lot of data and we had a lot of proof. And we had some other handouts as well, articles and things, but these were probably our primary handouts here. And we just had proof for what we said. And we did get a little lucky. We had myself, my family, and another family that was actually willing to stand up and say that we had been turned away from our kids' events. That's obviously very powerful for people because culturally in South Dakota, everybody goes to every single school event of their kids and their grandkids. So it was powerful that we had people turned away. It was powerful, and we got lucky that we had a senator turned away and we had two representatives turned away. So they kind of marketed for us in that way. And again, we did it immediately as soon as they did this school event ticketing thing. We immediately went for the legislation.
Can I add one
Okay.
comment?
Yeah, please.
I thank you, Susan, for this. It's really tremendous. I'm looking at that colored map, and I'm in Pennsylvania with the red. And I just observed that I know for a fact prior to COVID, there was no problem taking cash. And the initial explanation about why we needed to not take cash was in COVID because of the so-called virus. And then it has since moved to basically, there's no loss from people stealing from the cash box when they're running it, which was never a problem in the schools, in my experience. But just to understand why we're even talking about this, because to me, prior to COVID, we didn't even talk about it, even in Pennsylvania, that's red on that map.
Wow.
Right. So we had a, if you read through the nitty-gritty of our testimony, we've calculated the number of years we've been accepting cash in this country. I think it's 240 years. And then so that was one argument we used against what you just said. And then the other argument we used is that trends in payment, Ricardo, if you scroll up, I'm not sure if we can find it here quick. There's too many things, but okay, maybe the previous I don't know where it is. Actually, it's under talking points and statistics, one more up. If you look at trends in payment, that first document, can you scroll down to the colored part of it? There you go. So if you look in 2016 here, 31% of payments were cash. Cash is that green line on the left side. So in 2016, 31% of payments were in cash. In 2022, 18% of payments are in cash. So we're taking a lot less cash in our cash box at a football game in 2022 than we were in 2026. So why were we not worried in or in 2016? Sorry, why weren't we worried in 2016, but now all of a sudden we're worried about cash in the cash box when we have less of it? And we have the same number of football players on a football team and the same number of parents going to that game. So that was kind of the argument we used. And
It's
a
funny,
good
you know,
point.
the thing that's been working on cash is the disasters. So repeatedly, whenever we have extreme events like North Carolina and East Tennessee, you know, you see electricity go down and then electronic payments not work and reports of thank God we have cash. But we saw this year the Norwegian, or last year, the Norwegian Central Bank, and Norway has always been in the lead in getting to all digital. The Norwegian Central Bank announced, okay, we've gone too far. We're rolling it back because we can see operating without cash is not safe. So the natural disasters are also pushing it the other way. Okay, so let's go on to Tennessee. So Elizabeth has been working in Tennessee on a cash bill, and we were hopeful that it would go through this year, but we've just learned that it's going to. We're going to wait and run it next session. Elizabeth, you want to come in?
Sure. So in Tennessee, we have 2-year sessions. And so since we filed the bill this year, we won't have to refile next year. All the co-sponsors and everything will carry over. What we did this year was last year when we were talking about the idea, the University of Tennessee was against it because they've already gone cashless for their big football games. So we actually worked with the University of Tennessee on getting the current language of the bill. We got them okay with it. And the workaround that we found was that they would have kiosks put in place where someone could go insert cash into the kiosk and then have like a prepaid card come out. And as long as the university had that in place or someplace where the person could go physically to exchange cash for a card, those were the two workarounds. And the University of Tennessee was okay with it. So we're like, great, we're green lighted. But then just this week, the Memphis Grizzlies sports team came out against it. Some big car dealerships came out against it because they were worried about having a lot of cash on hand, even though, for decades they've had a lot of cash on hand. And when we met with the subcommittee chairman, he promised us that he would work with us over the summer to get all the parties okay with it. And since we are in a 2-year session, it just seemed to make sense just to wait instead of risking it dying. So we didn't want to have to go against that. And I just have to say, Susan, all of the data you put together is going to be so incredibly helpful for me over the summer as we continue to work on this and get it. And I would love to talk to you at some point just more in depth about everything you've done. And then, as Karen mentioned, back in 2023, we at Solari helped get a bill through that authorized that the treasurer of Tennessee could invest portions of the rainy day fund in gold and silver. He came back to us the next year and asked that we tell him where to actually pull that money from and how much. And so we had a bill last year that was going to do just that. It failed. It's back again this year. We have leadership buy-in.
Oh, I think we lost Elizabeth. Elizabeth, I'm gonna jump forward to Q&A. Well, let me just ask, is Representative Ivory still here? So you have been very successful at encouraging Utah to be more bold about taking using gold and silver in the state finances. What are the arguments that you have found have been most effective for you?
Well, I think the federal government makes those arguments for us every
Mm-hmm.
minute of every day. Specifically, last March, there was a unanimous resolution from the U.S. Senate. Every Republican, every Democrat in the U.S. Senate, it's SRES 600 from March of 2024, and they point out that debt is the number one threat to national security. And back in the good old days when the debt was 34 trillion, it's now pushing 37 trillion in less than a year. The interest on the debt back then was $659 billion. It's now over a trillion. It's the second largest federal expenditure, growing 10 times faster than every other federal expenditure, meaning it'll be the largest federal expenditure probably in less than 2 to 3 years. It's just interest on the national debt. The deficit a year ago was $1.5 trillion. It's $2.2 trillion a year later. These are horrific numbers, and they're going to crash on every one of the states that their number one source of revenue, including Utah, is transfer payments from the federal government, federal funds, so-called. And so every state, their number one source of revenue is federal funds that the federal government itself tells us is unsustainable. So we can sit around and do nothing and be acted upon, or we can stand up as sovereign actors that have a sizable degree of monetary authority under Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution that admonishes that no state shall make anything but gold and silver legal tender in payment of debts. We don't have to stand by and allow the money, the embodiment of the earnings and savings and production of our people. We don't have to stand idly by while that's being eroded, I would say taken, misappropriated by an unelected group of people that control the supply of money in the United States. In the nation that prides itself as being founded on life, liberty, property, and being a capitalist nation, we are allowing a small group of unelected people to control the supply of money, which is ridiculous. And so I think the only way that we interrupt that, I'll be nice and call it misappropriation of the earnings and savings of the people in Utah and America, is by offering a sound money choice. And so Marlo, that you'll get to, Marlo's done a great job on the bill that we did last year, House Bill 348. He convened a precious metals study group that had some of the great financial luminaries in the nation, former vice chair of the Federal Reserve, CFO of some of the largest companies in the world on this study group. And almost unanimously, I'll let Marlo speak to that. But the idea of allowing people to have choice in how they store the value of their earnings and savings and how they transact with that value of their earnings and savings in a medium that is not eroded by 10% per year. And even if the Federal Reserve does its job perfectly, they take 2% of the value of our earnings and savings every year. And I don't know that anyone consciously agreed to that. And so in Utah, we're offering choices that initially our rainy day fund can be stored in precious metals that's now going to cross through 3,000 any day now. We're allowing then vendors to choose to be paid in gold and silver. And then as we continue to move, that will move forward, that will allow employees and others in the state to have that same security and that same choice to be able to store the value of their earnings and savings, the embodiment of their life and their liberty and their blood, sweat, and tears in a medium of exchange that has held its value and stood the test of time for millennia. And so that's where we're moving in Utah.
One of the advantages you have is you have a good private depository in Utah.
We do.
And
We're one of
I'm
only 4 states in the nation that has a Brinks depository already here.
right. And
Also,
so,
Catherine, sorry if I may, what people didn't realize is gold is our number one export in Utah. It's also our number one import.
I didn't know it was your number one import.
Right.
Well,
We have the
the you're
refining.
refining,
Yeah,
you're importing it for the refining.
exactly.
Right. So you have a lot of, now, have you been able to encourage the citizens? Are the citizens buying more for their personal holdings? Is the percentage of people in Utah who hold gold and silver going up?
I don't know that I could speak to that. I will tell you that the popular support for the bill that we did last year, House Bill 348, that allows Marlowe to invest a portion of our rainy day fund in gold and silver, it was the popular outcry that brought that bill back from the dead. That bill was killed six different times throughout the session. And it was the people that refused to let it die. They kept bringing it back. And so it was this popular support and continuing to reach out to their legislators, to leadership, to the governor. And so the kinds of things that people are talking about, getting people engaged, getting them to leverage their voice, getting them to engage in the process, it's critical. It's fundamental. And that's how we've been able to move these things forward.
That's great. That's great. Congratulations.
Well, more to come. Stay tuned. We have more plans going forward.
Okay, well, you got a great treasurer, so.
Yeah, absolutely. We do. I think we have the best
Yeah.
treasure in the nation, 100%.
Okay, so Ben Harrison from Alabama has joined us. Ben, welcome.
Hey, Catherine. I came in a little bit late.
Any luck getting golden and silver purchases going in Alabama yet?
Well, we've got a SB 130, which has passed the Senate unanimously, getting legal gold and silver bullion legal tender.
Wow, that's
So
great.
it's in the House committee now. I don't know when they'll drop it, but we're on break here this week, and we'll be returning next week.
Okay.
I'll get to see where it's. I would expect it would to pass. I mean, we removed the sales tax in previous years, and then the capital gains on it now. This is kind of the last link for legal tender anyway.
And have you found popular support for this?
Yes. I was just talking to, at a meeting last Monday. But people are supporting it.
That's great.
I have talked to Mike Hill with the Banking Association. I think we can get a meeting with you and he and Boozer, the state treasurer on state banking. But Boozer's is adamantly opposed to it, and probably will be. And as long as he's treasurer.
Right. I would love to get more community banks involved in both the silver and gold and in the banking side, because we
And
need
there's a,
both.
you know, the same meeting that I was talking about on Monday, people that were on the board of banks, they recognize that the CBDC is trying to abolish the community banks and the credit unions. So, there's growing recognition of what they're doing. Is what we're lacking is getting people in, that are in position to do something about it to act.
Right. So, Marlo, you've been working on trying to figure out the electronic gold transaction. I'd love to hear what you've been doing.
Yeah, so and part of this is my concern about taking physical gold, honestly. Having a bullion depository, we did actually talk to Texas a little bit about their experience. But for us, I think the key is having gold that is stored physically in the state,
Right.
even with an electronic platform. That's going to be a requirement of the vendor, and hopefully we'll be able to find somebody who's willing to do that, and then we would be able to audit things physically here in the state. And so we also want to have the ability for people to pull their money out off of the platform if they
So, and they
wanted
can
to.
pull it out in gold and silver or in
Correct.
cash? Yeah.
So, whether we allow people to put money in physically, right, and deposit it somewhere. I'm not even thinking about that right now. We're just
Right.
trying to think about how do we get the electronic system up and going. And one of the keys there is that, and really the goal is to attack the capital gains element, to really address that at the federal level. Because right now, with gold and silver being taxed as a collectible, it really hampers the use of gold and silver as money. So the electronic platform allows or would allow the fractionalization of gold and silver in the economy, so you can use it without carrying physical gold around. And then being able to pull it out if you wanted to, and then being able to bring forward a case potentially if needed, where the state of Utah may be party to that legal case to challenge the capital gains. So the bill really contemplates the state choosing a vendor that would allow businesses that have business with the state to be paid in gold and silver if they so ch choose to do that. So it would just be one of several options. They currently have two or three options today, and this would be just an additional option that would allow
So,
them to have that.
are you thinking of using a card system with it?
Right. Yeah, like
And
a
can you
debit
get that
card.
card system to be under the jurisdiction of Utah's laws?
I believe so. So there has been some conversation around that, but that's going to be part of the details, I think, that we'll hammer out with the RFP.
Okay. Yeah. So, if you read our bank depository thing, we talk a lot about jurisdictional issues. So, I have to say this, Treasurer Marlo Oakes, as many of us know, is an incredible resource. So, Susan and Tim, if you have questions for him, please. I'm sure he wouldn't mind.
So
Thank
if
you.
I understand,
Go ahead, Susan.
it right, Treasurer Oakes, you were saying it'd be like a credit card potentially, where you swipe your credit card, except instead of it going to a credit card company,
I think it'd be a debit card. A
Right,
debit,
debit
sorry,
card.
a debit card. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if you wanted to, you could take your debit card to the depository and get your gold and silver out.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Treasurer Oakes, I just want to, for you and Representative Ivory, I think that the way you approach it in terms of making it optional is very important, which I don't have to, don't have to tell you. I'm learning something from you, but it's akin to the informed consent model in health, is that you're not taking freedom away from somebody, you're giving them a choice. And to me, that's more amenable because nobody's required to do it. So I think that's excellent.
Correct. Yeah, it's that optionality, right? That just giving people the option to transact in the economy how they choose.
So here's my concern, Tim, and it's just, as you know, I'm a deeply suspicious woman. If the state creates a good gold and silver transaction system, but then the CBDC comes down on the dollar, and if I'm in my state can't transact dollars with somebody else in their state, in my state, I can only do it in gold and silver, then I'm in a short squeeze. So, you know, that's why it's so important to me the state protect, but you know, the state have both and protect both, because clearly there are tremendous benefits, I believe, in having gold and silver to protect you against inflation. But I hate to get in a situation where that's my only option. I will say this, everybody I've talked to about their state legislative session has said that this year was overwhelming.
I'm very glad it's over.
When Marlo, when was it over?
Last Friday. So ours
Last
is a
Friday.
45 calendar day session. I think it's the fastest in the nation and it's intense, but it does end rather quickly. So.
Okay, well, I think any other thoughts, any other comments? Anybody want to mention anything? Contribute?
Catherine, this is Karen again. I've been working with Bud Halsey on the same issue of eliminating local property tax, and we hope to have presented something this year, but then they cut their bills down, the number of bills. So we're looking to do something next year. So if you get anything that you think could help us, let me know.
Okay. Well, Bud had told me he'd passed a bill where you could pay your property taxes forward. And I keep
Yes.
trying to do that in my county, but they've never heard of it and won't do it. So
Right.
one of the
Well,
things I've been meaning to do is get a copy of the bill and walk it back in.
yes, it was a bill that was passed. My county, they are aware of the bill, but it takes system changes. So the county has to go to the state comptroller and request an upgrade of their systems in order to accept tax payments in advance. So I had referred the fact that Sullivan County would not, was not adhering to the law. I referred that to Bud. Bud took it to the state comptroller, and that was our response, that the counties have to get in touch with the comptroller and say, hey, come on down and upgrade our systems.
Wow. I think that's a
Oh
great thing.
yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to do it. And but again, I think the real hopeful goal is to eliminate property tax. There's a city in Texas, Stafford, Texas, that has not had local property tax since 1995, and they did not accomplish it by raising sales tax either. So,
So let me mention one thing that is a great to me is a very important issue in this changing of the relationship between the federal government and the state government. There's a group called Strong Towns. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It was started by a municipal engineer named Chuck Marone, and he kept trying to talk his municipal clients out of taking federal grants because he said, you're going to get a whole bunch of money up front, but you won't be able to afford the maintenance. And finally, Lafayette, Louisiana was trying to get another federal grant, and the city council got him hired to do an analysis of how far behind they were in their maintenance expenses. And he came in, it's a published study, it's up on the web, and we've done two interviews with him at the Slurry Report. He calculated that to take care of their maintenance, their forward maintenance expenses under all these federal grants, that they would have to raise the average property tax in Lafayette, Louisiana was $1,800 a year. He said they were going to have to raise it, I think, to 8,000 just to maintain what they had, let alone take another grant. And
Right.
if you look at the embedded obligations, what Chuck said to me is, look, Detroit's just first. The rest of us, if we really, if we really honor these contract liabilities, we're going to have explosive property tax expenses.
Well,
And
it's
so
happened.
we've got to have a fundamental recut of how the federal and state government, what the obligations are back and forth, because it's a hidden and growing liability in the system.
Right. Well, and you're seeing huge raises in property taxes this year. One house that I own, property tax went up, the assessment on the house went up 54%. So there was something that you said that made me think of something, and just like that, I have a senior
Well,
moment.
here's one thing. If I know very little about it, about what's happening state to state, but if there are states that are moving to protect people against the rises in property taxes, it might not be a briefing, but we could have a roundtable on it.
Well, we, I had approached a senator, a Tennessee senator, about federal funding and how could we get away, and he said, well, I'd rather use their money than our money. And I said, well, their money is our money, number one. And number two, he said, oh, well, by us taking all this federal money, because I think Tennessee is like 40% federally funded, he said that, well, this is how we keep our taxes low, by taking federal money. See, this is the mindset of these legislators that has to change.
Well, in fact, if you look at what we're doing in May, it's about, it's really going to go to the issue of how we stop the states from accepting money that brings in terms and conditions that all, fundamentally violate the law. How do we avoid getting bought out of the Constitution?
And who was this gentleman that you said was, you have an article about the studies that he's done? And
His name is Chuck Marone, MAHORN. He's
okay.
got two very good books. But there's two interviews of him on the Salieri Report. And Karen, what I would do is I would go listen to those
Oh, I'm going to. I will.
and
Thank
check
you.
out the links. And Bob, I didn't know if you wanted to say anything, but you're someone who's accomplished a great deal, and there's interesting things going on in your state.
Yeah, I'll chime in here real quick. I'm in the state senate here in Wyoming. It's my third session. I ran the Wyoming Gold Act a couple of years ago, and it ran into some pretty tough headwinds in the House. We got it out of the Senate. Ran it again this year, kind of streamlined it a little bit, and we got it through with a super majority in both chambers. I was afraid the governor was going to veto it. He wrote a letter to the Speaker of the House and the Senate President on all the reasons why we shouldn't do this, but he didn't veto it, but he let it go into law without his signature. So that just happened about a month ago.
And
So,
that's in the that purchase will go in the mineral fund, right?
yeah, we have a permanent mineral trust fund that's inviolate. So, we put a minimum on there of $10 million. So there is a minimum. So they have to do that from the get-go. The treasurer's office wasn't real excited about this. His chief investment officer doesn't like gold, and except for himself, not for the citizens of the state, to protect us against the ravages of inflation. So we had a pretty tough lift with the executive branch and the treasurer's office, but and I think we could have overrode the veto if he did, but he let it go into law. So on another note, we did get a ban on CBDCs passed through both chambers this session too. So
Oh, good for you.
yeah, so those were, that was after the governor's effect, or the president's executive order, where he effectively did that anyway, but we have it on in the green books in Wyoming now. So
Although I have to tell you, I'm very concerned at the federal level that they continue to try and do it on a private basis, which is to me even more frightening than a central bank one.
right. So yeah, just a couple of comments. Representative Ivory, we had a lot of tailwinds on this thing with what the federal government's doing. All I did was really show charts of how, when we closed the gold window in 71, what gold has done in the last 50 years effectively. And just use, we've got a pretty good conservative house. Very conservative. The Freedom Caucus took over for the first time this year. I knew I was going to do well there. The Senate, I did a lot better than I thought. But yeah, just tell them that there's two ways to conquer and enslave a nation. One is by the sword, and the other is by debt. I used a John Adams quote.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, no, I'll keep it short. Everybody's probably ready to go. So yeah, we had some success this year. My wife, just give her a plug. 2018, she's the state coordinator for Campaign for Liberty. We got the Wyoming Legal Tender Act passed in 2018, which is really the best legislation in the country as far as all the other states that have passed it. They like it. Sound
Yeah.
money. Sound Money Defense League. If anybody ever wants to go there, Wyoming's ranked number one on Sound
Yeah.
Money. We're trying to build on that. So, thanks to my wife, she got a legislator to carry it in 2018. It was before I was there, and we're trying to carry it on.
That's the that was the basis for our legal tender. The one we just put up on the website as a model. Somebody, you guys did a great job on that. So, who was the author who helped do that?
My wife worked with, we actually worked with a couple of organizations, Money Metals Exchange out of
Right.
Idaho, and United Precious Metals out of Utah. They were very helpful in helping draft the legislation, primarily Money Metals Exchange
Now,
on
where are
that.
you gonna? You don't have a depository in Wyoming, do you?
Oh, so that's another highlight. I in Casper, Wyoming, where I'm from, my wife and I are from. There's, if anybody wants to go to a website, it's called Scottsdale Mint. And they searched all over the world to put their precious metals manufacturing mint and their and they've dovetailed this with the Wyoming Reserve. So we have a class three vault. It's one of the only ones. You know, Utah has Brinks, Idaho has Money Metals. They have a class three vault. They're really, I call the one in Casper, it's still not fully finished, but it's staffed with about 50 people. It's they're going to have armed guards, you know, fully authenticated, assayed, you allocated. You can, you know, the state of Wyoming looking to store their metals there. So we
Oh,
do
that's wonderful. When is it going to be available to retail customers?
have you know, it's probably right now they have a smaller vault that's available. Big class three vault that they've got is basically finished right now, and they're manufacturing everything here. They started in Scottsdale, a guy named Josh Fair, and he's moving all of his operations here. He could have gone to Singapore, to Switzerland, to Texas, to South Dakota. He picked Wyoming because of our sound money laws and just because of the foreign trade zone here, free trade zone. And we're going to try to make Wyoming the Switzerland of the United States.
Wow, that's great. Well,
Yeah.
thank you very much for that report. I really appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, a great conversation. Thank you to everyone for participating. Marlo, thank you for you and Brittany and several members of your office for joining. We really appreciate that. Keep us posted on what we can do to help you all because you're doing great work out there and it means the world. So, Susan and
Thank
Tim,
you.
anything you want to add before we close?
Just thanks for all the sharing of information. I learned something, and I always learn something on these calls, so appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. I've learned a lot here about gold. I know a lot about cash, but I don't know much about gold. And I hope we can start that here in South Dakota too. So thank you for that.
Okay. Ricardo, thank you for the slides. Carolyn, thank you for all the work on the precious metals legislation. Elizabeth, thank you for calling in from the road. Everyone, have a great evening. And let's just keep sending prayers out for financial freedom.